one right. The beginning of the visit with Charlotte is Friday morning, 9th November 73, with Faye. Channel one right. The beginning of the visit with Charlotte is Friday morning, 9th November 73, with Faye. Channel one right. The beginning of the visit with Charlotte is Friday morning, 9th November 73, with Faye.
The paper ran out, and I didn't hear from anybody, and I was telling Mr. Miles, I was kind of disgusted. That was the first time I had ever advertised, and within a week, didn't hear from anybody. Uh-huh. 2 weeks later, 3 weeks later, this guy calls me up, and he said, Monday or Tuesday, he called me up, and he said, Miss Dodd, you still have those cows? And I said, not a soul's called me about these cows.
I've all
them. And he said, you mind if I come and look at them? I said, certainly. And I'd be glad to have you come look at them. I'm trying to sell them. So he lived in Wildwood. He said, I'll be there this afternoon. And he came up and he looked at them. And he hawed around, you know, and he looked at them. And then he looked at the bull, and he was crazy about the bull. Looked at the heifers, and he loved the heifers. Then he left, and he said, he give me a ring and let me know one way or the other what he's going to do. Well, I didn't hear from him. 3 or 4 days went by. This was last Monday.
Last Monday. Uh-huh. Hello? Yes. Hi. Fine? Oh, no. Yeah.
It's
all right.
See the paper that I can't find. I don't know what happened to it.
These are all on the.
We really got a system on this registration, haven't we?
Oh boy.
Now, once you get those straight, it'll be.
It's easy.
No trouble.
It's all right.
From these now on, you want to keep them right.
Those are just on the cows on the transfers. Here's a pen if you need one.
I just got to set up it.
This is all the transfers and registration on the cows that I sold when I'm going to send in.
Yeah. Well, you missed your calling, Charlie. You be a cattleman and keep up with the, I can't read the fine print. Is that the place right there?
Let me see. Well, you just sign it here,
yeah.
And I'll fill that in for you,
okay.
I guess. Let me look and see on this one here. That's all you just signed right there. But tell me what we would do here. It says, if pasture exposed, from when to when. So what do we do? Just tell him that he's been exposed from 1 year to the next year, or what?
It's from you got to give yourself a little leeway.
Yes.
Say March, April, May, June.
Okay.
Or catch it.
Okay.
This secretary business, you know, is on the television the other morning, or sometime. And this woman has written a book. And one of the things, the secretaries are getting so professional now, you see, they won't peel an apple for the boss. In the old days, they said the boss would send her in an apple and say, peel that and cut it in 8 pieces.
These are all signs. I just held these up until I got the whole thing. That way I can send a check, one check for the whole business.
Faye? I don't know what I did that to you. Faye? 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 Faye?
Did he?
He was just looking for something.
Oh.
There.
From,
yeah.
Lost something or another here.
Yeah, that's pretty.
And he's washing and sitting so bad, and I've been scared to get in my tub, afraid the preacher would go.
That preacher.
I'm telling you. I did take a bath last night. I took the, or yesterday before everybody came home. But I took the receiver off the hook so the phone wouldn't ring. I locked all the doors and I got in the tub. My feet was hurting me so bad. I had arthritis in my ankles. And I'd been running those cows and I was sore.
Oh, I should say.
So I thought, well, I'm going to take that receiver off the hook and just sit in that tub for a few minutes. So that's what I did. But I was scared to wash my hair. It would take me too long.
Take the phone off the hook?
I took the phone off the hook and locked the doors and went in and soaked in the tub for a while after I chased those cows around and tried to get them delivered. I was scared the preacher would come and somebody would call and it was an emergency, so I just took my sweet time in the bathtub before everybody got home. If I don't get in that tub before everybody gets in, I'm 10 o'clock taking my shower for the night.
You're the last one.
Yeah, I know, I'm always the last one.
Well, 10 o'clock is a little late for me. I get woke up.
Oh,
wakes me up.
I love to get in bed now that it's dark around 8 o'clock, if I can. I'm always 7:30, 8 o'clock having supper when Berman comes in so late.
You know, I see no point at all of all this daylight saving.
I don't either.
In the middle of the winter.
I don't either.
All it does is going to get you up before dark.
That's right.
Full light.
That's right.
Full day. I don't know. A lot of those things they do just to make people feel like they're patriotic. That's the way it was in World War II,
yeah.
When they had all these little towns, you know, they were collecting paper. It wasn't worth the trouble. It was just a morale building. They thought they'd done something.
Just,
do you remember that?
Yeah. Just giving them something to do.
Yeah. I told Lois Dixon that one time. Why, she said she couldn't believe anything like that because she spent half her time collecting paper.
Well,
yeah.
Did you hear the Dixon report the other night?
I had some of it.
Yeah. I kind of hate to see anybody try to talk about impeaching him. I think he's doing what he can, and that's about all any mortal can do.
Yeah, Shelley, he's a screwball.
He is. I'll agree to that. And it sounds like to me that he's trying to cover up a lot on that Watergate business. But who are we going to get in there that's any better?
Well, I think that's the question.
That's the question.
I told Berman to go and run and I'd vote for him. Who do I make this out to, Guy Miles? Just,
yeah. Oh, it's question. I thought he was pretty good. I was proved of him all that first time. I'm telling you.
Yeah, I think he was the best that they had going for us at the time.
I tell you, Shelley, that Russian wheat deal is the thing that got him.
Yeah. Well, it should.
Do you hear Phyllis Lockley or something like that? She's a woman, and she's on the Channel 4, the day program.
Can't get 4.
They stick her, you can.
I get 2.
There's something wrong with your
6.
Error.
I can get anything but 4.
Well, 6 is CBS.
Is she on 6?
Is that CBS?
That's Orlando, yeah. No, that's, it's Orlando, but it's not. No, 9 is Orlando. 6 is CBS. That's right.
Yeah.
Phyllis Schlafly.
I've heard her.
She talks.
Heard of her. Here too much. The one I hate to miss is Paul Harvey. I get him 7:30 in the morning, and then I get him again at 12:30 at noon, you know, dinner time.
Yeah, he's a bag of wind compared to her.
But, to me, he says more than 5 minutes than all the other news commentators say all day long. I don't know her that well.
You haven't heard her.
I haven't heard her.
I'm betting on her.
You remember Gabriel Heater, don't you?
Yeah.
This Paul Harvey makes me think of Gabriel Heater a lot.
Paul Harvey tells you what he thinks you want
to
know.
Yeah, that's it. And he tells you what is on his mind, you know, what he thinks.
Yeah.
He doesn't tell, there's a lot of them that don't do that.
He's a windbag.
Now I like Paul Harvey. I sure will. There's your check there. Now let me see, there's two registrations that we got to straighten out here. One we missed in that bunch. This was on that heifer there, and this one I made out to me, and it should have been to, no, that's the one, should have been to Johnny. See, this is the one that he's going to take to the fair.
Yeah.
So that one was a mistake on my part that I had to make over again. So
you
want to sign that one up there. And then this one, we skipped in the bunch. I don't know how we missed it.
Just missed it.
I guess so. And this is the one on the affidavit on the two cows papers that we had lost on this one here. This one and this one. I don't know whether these are the ones that's out there in the field or whether the cows that you say you lost or just what these belong to. But anyhow, those were the two on the two cows that we couldn't find the papers on.
Yeah.
These here, so it just says, I guess you put your name here and the county here and the state of Florida here, and then just sign it there. I guess that's all you have to do there.
I can't see the print too. I put my name right here.
Yes. And the county. And then the state. And then sign it at the bottom there. Yeah, I think that takes care of them all. You know, that's going to cost me $490 to get it all straightened out.
Yeah, see, that's 8 and 5 is 13 times
25. 25, right.
Plus the...
That's 325, plus the registration on all the calves.
Yeah.
And plus the transfers on the cow and the bull.
Let me tell you, that, what's happening to that pretty little calf over there?
Oh, she's a beauty. That 37?
Is she growing?
She's got all the feed she can eat.
Yeah.
Sitting right in front of her all day long.
Yes,
she's got all the vitamins mixed in her feed.
Yes,
she's got fresh water, running water there all the time. And hay, clover hay, sitting in the corner. She don't even touch the hay. She just stands in front of that. Here's what she does. She stands in front of that lick.
She's going to be like...
And she eats
Patrick.
Real slow, and she said all makes it last all day long.
I never saw any spoiled animal as spoiled as that Patrick was.
Oh, you don't know.
I mean,
she's really good.
I mean, Patrick just took it for granted that he was going to have a handout every time he saw anybody.
Yeah.
Huh?
Well, I think we got this.
Faye?
We get these all...
I want to tell you, Shirley and I, we're going out in the field, or going home, I don't know what you're going to do.
Well, Daddy said that Coleman, that Miss Annie said that Coleman's not coming.
Well, I can let him in.
Yeah, he said this way,
shoot. Well, we'll go down there and let him in.
Sure. That's
we can drive down there, or walk.
Just
make sure we didn't skip any of these. We have to go all through this again.
Yeah.
We skipped one of the registrations, so I held it up for the transfers at the same time.
I'm telling you, hey, we really worked out this registration.
I bet you did.
You know,
it's easy. Of course, I just threw them up. The first one that came down was the one that got that cast. That's about the only way you said to do it.
You know, yeah, that's right.
But they're all too pretty not to register them. So.
You know.
I had to do it.
You know, I got into that, and I worked 3 or 4 weeks on that, Shirley.
I know it.
And, you know, I'd work on it an hour or two, and I'd get the willies.
I know what you mean. I had to do a little of the thought.
So I throw it away, stash it away, and wait for inspiration to come again some other day.
Oh no.
And then I don't know. It was a long job, and getting those neck chains and all like that, you see. Well, as it turns out, you don't need a neck chain. But I thought
these are all ready to go. All I gotta do is put the stamp on the envelope. That takes care of my herd and your herd too. I'm telling you.
Well, how about that?
It was a pile there for a while. We still don't know which bull we got out here, whether he's domestic lamp or Larry Lear. He's Larry Lear.
I don't have any lamps.
Well, if he's Larry Lear, he is 12 years old.
No.
See here, this is what Mrs. What's-her-name gave me.
Oh, I see.
He's domestic lamp guy.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. He must be.
He's domestic
lamp. I think Larry Lear was your real life color.
He was the former
bull. That's right. This is domestic lamp.
Well, I've made all these registrations out under Larry Lear, and I'm going to leave him there.
But
now these heifers, these young calves, we're just registering. They are this bull out here. This is his calf.
Yeah.
Now the heifers, the ones that aren't bred, the eight, they're not his calves, or are they Larry Lear's calves?
They're Larry Lear's.
I don't know. I got this. I have to sit down on a piece of paper. That's figuring which way you turn your.
Because I can't breed them, but this bull, and if they are his calves, is that right? And the
that's
two.
Right.
And the 2 year olds.
Yeah.
That are
well, now they're
bred.
Different. They're different.
These
what I call the weanlings, the eight of them.
Yeah.
They are the first ones that you can't breed back to this bull. So the others must be from Larry Lear, and this is from these are from Lamp.
I'll have to borrow a bull somewhere and come spray.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to buy another one. I just want to breed those eight. I'll connive around some way.
Oh, yeah.
That's not going to be a problem.
Well,
I wish they'd been old enough and they'd been later in the in the spring that we could have used that bull before we sold him, but he left yesterday, so won't be able to use him.
Well,
I think this guy would let me use him if I asked him.
Yeah.
Oh, he's crazy about that bull. I liked him. He was nice and gentle. He was scared to death of him. All I do is take him by the ear and lead him into the truck. He's a good size.
Well,
he's
he's the one that would act peculiar.
Oh, no, we got rid of that one a long time ago.
Oh, of course. Excuse me. Yeah.
This one here was real gentle. And
well, maybe that's the one you need to keep.
I wanted to keep him.
Is he up to this?
Berman didn't like that. He likes your bull. I do too. I like this one too. So this is why we moved the other bull, because we can't afford to keep two bulls. And I got $1,000 for him. So I paid it. I got $150 more than I paid for him. $150 more.
He's
a 100. He's six years old. Well, this one was dropped. 66. He's 7 years old. I think today's his birthday. I think so.
So he's not.
I had it down here somewhere.
It ain't not hurting him. Now
what did I do with that other brown envelope?
That other bull played out.
Oh, it's one of those. No. Well, here it is. Let's see. This one here, if he's domestic lamp, was 11-2. The second.
Yeah.
The second he was 7 years old.
Yeah.
7 years old. Yeah.
Yeah, he's domestic lamp.
11-2 on the second. So we got to pick a big pot of grain.
It's a shame to call it. I call them all pappies, see, now. And so I forget their name. And whatever happened to that darn certificate, I bet that burned.
Our first bull, we lost the registration papers on somehow. We didn't. Daddy did. And I wrote and got a duplicate copy. That was Tom Hyde Domino. I'll never forget him. He was a nice bull, real nice. And it was the first Hershey bull we had. And I wrote and asked for a duplicate on that bull. And I bet you they wrote me back 6 times for different information on that bull. But we finally got a duplicate, copy, a registration with a duplicate written underneath it. So
yeah.
That's all I had to go on.
Yeah. Well, I never saw a bull like this one. He's good natured, and those cows, they end in the foolishness when he comes out.
Yeah, yeah.
He's the best bull we ever had.
Oh, he's the best bull. I never realized, I said that several times, I never realized there was such a difference in bulls.
Yeah. Well, the main thing I look for him is being so gentle. You know, this one seems to be gentle, and the one that we just sold was real gentle. But that one before,
yeah.
That means a lot when they're real gentle.
Yeah.
That one that we've had, the one before this one, Santa Fe, the one I got from Santa Fe River Ranch. That was the meanest bull we have ever had, and there wasn't nothing to him anyhow. I didn't like him when I first saw him, but he was the best thing Mr. Sneed had over there.
You just didn't have much luck with Santa Fe.
No. Even
what?
These cows.
Isn't that
now, there's some of them cows turned out real good.
Yeah.
And they're beautiful. They're really nice. And there's a couple down there yet I've got from you that are real nice.
Well.
And they hold their weight all the time. Mm-hmm. They don't go down. But those that went down every winter, no matter what I did to them, they just lose their weight and stay down. And then in the summer, they get rolling fat. But in the winter, they when they have a calf on them, the calf would pull them down.
Yeah. I think the crossbreeds do better. Now, these over here, you see, across that fence over there, the black cows, they just go right along. They can breed and they can calve in December.
Now this guy that bought these cows from me is getting out of the crossbreed business.
Yeah.
He had half Hereford and half Angus and half Charley half Hereford and half Braemar.
Yeah.
And half Charley and half Braemar.
Yeah.
And he said there were some beautiful heifers. There's some 1-year-olds and 2-year-olds that he's going to take to market. And I said, for goodness sakes, man, don't take them to market. Try to sell them before you take them to market. So I called him in early this morning, and he's going to go down there and look at them. He thinks he's going to buy them. So.
She keeps in touch with all these.
That's what you have to do.
Yeah, but he was so good, you know, and such a nice fella.
Yeah.
I told him, I said, well, don't take them to market. I said, I'll send you a buyer. And sure enough, I called him this morning. He went on down there before I came over here.
Well, now you see, the sort of people I got in with was old Williams over there at Cross Creek. Did you ever know him?
Yeah.
Well, he was a nice fellow if you didn't do business with him.
Yeah, but he was shrewd when you went to go.
Well, he's not only shrewd, he's a screwball.
Yeah.
And you actually never could work along with him.
No. No, and you're not the only one that said that. There's several other people that said the same thing. They couldn't work with him. And I'll tell you who's got his cattle right now. He bought over the cattle after Mr. Williams died. He's got an ad in the bulletin this month, I noticed. Lives over in High Springs. I can't think of his name. Joe something or another. Anyway, he's got some bulls advertised in the bulletin this month over High Springs.
You don't go to that Farm Bureau dinner every year.
Yeah, most every year we go.
Oh, do you?
Uh-huh.
Well, that's what it's for, people like you with a family and everything, and with that's where you keep up your connections.
Yes, and you'd be surprised. Berman hates for me to go. He just hates me to go. Everybody in the place seems to know me, you know, and they come up and they'll all want to talk, and they all stand in line to talk. And he sits there like a sore thumb, and he, you know, because he's not interested really in talking cattle business with them. He doesn't.
Yeah.
He wants to keep his business to himself.
Uh-huh.
And I get out and talk to these people, and I have a time.
I'll go with you sometime.
Okay, all right, that's a deal.
That's right.
You ought to have your talk.
I just go along.
If I had my way, I'd be going to these cattle sales all the time just to talk to the farmers, more or less.
Yeah.
More the buyers, the sellers. That's where I think I could find a lot of, information.
Yeah.
But I can't get away to go.
Well, I don't think you move easily. Sometimes you move, but you get
I'm a home girl.
So
I hate to say it. I hate to go away from home. I got so much to do at home. I feel like I'm just a home girl. I've always been that way.
Well, that don't keep you from going on the livestock market for
a
couple hours.
Well, see, that's my drive for satisfaction when I want to get out and get some information or get some new buyers or find out what the prices are going for or what people really want.
Yeah.
And when they start talking about registered stuff, my ears stick up like antennas.
Yeah.
That'd be fun to go with Shirley, wouldn't
yeah.
She gets, she'd find out things.
But it discourages me to go to market anymore, though, because these buyers,
no matter where I go, they sit on this side.
They sit on this side and they're talking to me both at the same time while I'm trying to watch what's going on in the ring.
Well, that could be.
And it irritates me at times. But
you don't get discouraged at the turn of the market. You just want to see what goes on.
Yeah.
I know that.
But have you ever been in a place where you want to hear what's going on and there's so much commotion and talking and whispering about in the audience that that irritates me in church.
Yeah.
Some guy in back of us was getting something out of his pocket, and he was rattling change and keys, and then he started rattling some kind of cellophane paper, and I thought I was going to climb that wall. I was so engrossed in what Russell was preaching about, and then this guy back there going rattle, 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 rattle that cellophane paper. I thought to myself, he never quit.
Now, what was Russell saying that was so engrossing?
Let me see, what was it? Oh, he stepped on Berman's toes. Yeah, he's about working so hard, putting in so many hours and not doing enough for the Lord's work.
Yeah.
And I was like, Berman twisted this way and he twisted that way. And he said, it's not going to do your health any good. He said, you're going to tear your health down by worrying about this and worrying about that and not taking enough time to get out and enjoy yourself and talk with your neighbors and come to church and go to these fish fries, and Berman wasn't at the fish fry, and he wiggled this way, and he wiggled that way, and I tell you, I just knew Berman was going to go to pieces before the church service was over.
He felt like he was talking to him.
I just prior to this conversation, this preaching, I talked to Russell, and I told him I wanted to come out, and I wanted to talk to him about Berman working too hard.
Yeah.
So that's why he did this, I think.
Oh,
see,
I see.
I kind of instigated his message through the service.
The auctioneer has got his cousin out in the audience. He's got to have a little. The magician's got to have a little help, hasn't he?
Well, I worry about Berman because he just works too hard. He can't do anything. It can't be done less than perfect.
Yeah.
And then when you get that way, it's just too. You're just doing too much.
Well, I'll tell you one thing that would make me do it less than perfect is the cost of it. But Berman just goes ahead and pays it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he looks at it this way. A good fence that he puts up will be there for 10, 15 years. Whereas if he puts up just a sorry fence, then he's got to go back and redo it and redo it and redo it. And that irritates him.
Yeah.
Plus,
it does
cost more money in the long run.
Well, that's right.
And
that's
then
right.
You don't get the satisfaction out of a poor fence that you would a good fence. So he'd rather go and pay the expense. You've got to put the labor in anyway, whether it's a poor fence or a good fence. But you do have to spend a little more time with it. But once it's in there, you can put anything inside and it won't come out, and he doesn't have to worry about it. And he won't have to do it again next year or the year after. It'll be there 10, 15 years at least without any repair. So, in a way, he's right.
Well,
I think.
Now, you take these cross fences I put across there.
Well, it's all right for temporary fences.
Well,
right?
I put them in for temporary fence, and they serve the purpose.
Yeah.
All those posts are small, and they're 20 foot apart, and there's two strands of wire. Well, that'll hold my cows, but it won't hold these weanlings.
Yeah.
The weanling calves.
Yeah.
They'll walk right through it. So.
And then you can't wean them really because they're going to suck right through that fence.
Yeah.
You got to have a hog wire fence in between, or a field in between is better yet.
It's better yet, yeah.
In between the. Now, I put them over there in front of the house, and you saw the holes in that fence. They can come out anywhere they want to, but they don't. They stay right there.
As long as they're a field apart.
Uh-huh. And the mother's in the next,
apart.
Just the laneway there,
yeah.
Apart from them. And I don't have any trouble with them getting out.
I don't understand.
I don't either. But it worries me, because one night one of them may get out, and if one gets out, the whole bunch is going to get out, and all they have to do is walk up that laneway to the highway. So
yes, sir, you need
I
one
need a
of
good
those
fence.
Gaps.
Cattle guard.
You sure do. You need
You don't know where I can find one, do you?
Find one?
You can't find them anywhere.
You build them.
Well, if you can find the material to build it with, you got to have the iron rails and or the
or you need the 2-inch pipe.
Two by fours. They'd have to be wovenized.
Oh, I wouldn't put any of that stuff in.
Well, how would you build it?
Well, the only thing you need is a 2-inch pipe and set it in concrete.
And they won't walk over it?
No, they won't walk over it. Horses will jump it, but cows won't. And you need about how many, 6 or 8, 8 or 10? I don't know how many you need. 8 pieces of that pipe. But that pipe is will break you down.
Yeah.
Cost too much.
They used to use down there where we were, when they take up old railings from the railroad. They take these railroads and use those. The length of the railroad to see across there.
Yeah, that's right. That'd be fine.
I noticed over here at Santa Fe that they had some over there, and then they had some 4x4s laying this way on the cattle as for cattle racks guards, and they had some kind of a. Landing mats for the sides, you know, where they wouldn't go across the side from the side. And then over here at the railroad, just on River Six, going toward 441, on the second, is it the second railroad? I think it is. There's one railroad, two, three. I think it's the second railroad, just before you get to River Six. I mean, to 441 there. There's a railroad crosses there, and then that guy's got cattle back in there, and he put in a new cattle rack on the right-hand side. I haven't noticed, but I don't think he rebuilt the one on the left-hand side of the road. But that one on the right-hand side keeps them from getting over on the railroad track.
Mm-hmm.
You notice that one?
No.
But he didn't use very strong enforcements on the end, son. I noticed one side let loose. Two or four, I think, is all he used.
I don't know just what's in your mind. All I'd need would be just those 2-inch pipes.
Well,
I don't know about a dozen of them, I guess. And, you see, just ordinary fence would be the end of any sort of thing.
Well, that's an idea with them pipes.
And that keeps them. That keeps you. Then you don't have that worry all the time. And now mine, I can't remember but 2 or 3 times that my cows have got out of here. But that's 2 or 3 times.
Yeah.
And then I've got it on my mind all the time. If I hear anything, the first thing I do is go out there and look down there and see if I need to go down there and close that gate.
Well, we had a scare last weekend. It was Friday, Saturday, it was Sunday. Sunday night. You probably heard it on the radio. We heard Bonnie came knocking on our door, and she said, "Daddy," she said, "there's somebody out here in a wreck in the woods." And I said, "What?" And she said, "I hear sirens out there and voices, and somebody saying, don't do that, don't do that." And I woke Berman up. He wasn't quite awake, and he says, "Oh, you all go back to sleep. You're just dreaming." So about that time, we heard, you know, heard the siren. He come up out of that bed, covers and all. He grabbed his britches and ran outside with a flashlight. And he looked around and tried to find something. He couldn't see anything. So he says, "Honey, I'm going to jump in the car and run down the road." He says, "You want to go with me?" I said, "All right." So I jumped in the car and we went down. I locked the door so no one could get in the house. And I told the kids not to let anyone in unless they called their name. So I went on down with Berman. And we went down toward the creek, didn't see anything. Went back toward Mrs. Guthrie's and didn't see anything, so we went back to the house. This is about 1:30, 2 o'clock in the morning.
Nice time.
Sunday night. Running around our pajamas. Looking for a siren. We thought maybe there'd been a bad, real bad wreck on that road, because there has been a couple. And so we didn't hear anything, got undressed, went back to bed, and took our coats off, went on back to bed. And we know soon we laid down, we heard that siren again. So Bonnie says, "See, I told you, it is a siren." And she said, "I just heard him saying, Mr. Cook, Mr. Cook." And Berman says, "Well, I'm going to go outside and see what I can hear." So he stood out there in the back, and I stood out in the front, and I heard him say, "Mr. Cook, don't separate. Walk this way. Stay together. Don't separate. Walk this way." And they kept that up over and over again on a loudspeaker. And Berman says, "You know, I think somebody's lost out here in the woods. Did you hear about those two colored people that got lost in the woods Monday morning on the news? Well, they looked for those guys for 4.5 hours Sunday night." Well, what we thought was guys, it turned out to be a 52-year-old Negro woman and a 62-year-old Negro man. They'd spent the night out in the woods. Their neighbor had taken them out to Cross Creek to look for gophers and turn them loose, and they were to pick them up at 5:30. They went back at 5:30, and they weren't there. They went back to the place where they were supposed to meet him again at 6:30, and they weren't there. So at 11 o'clock, they still hadn't showed up at home, so they called the sheriff out. The sheriff got his deputies, and they went all looking through the woods for these two. So the next morning, they went out and looked again until about dinner time. Then I heard on the dinner noontime news that they had showed up at home. They had spent the night in the woods. They'd laid down because they got tired looking for gophers, and went to sleep. And when they woke up, it was dark, so they built a fire and spent the night in the woods. And they heard the sheriff calling, but they said they were scared to walk because they'd step on snakes getting to the highway. So they stayed right where they were at. And the next morning, daylight...
they wouldn't be afraid of stepping on snakes.
Yeah.
So the next morning at daylight, they hitched a ride at on the highway there at 325 before you get to our mailbox. They caught a ride and got home, but they didn't bother to let anybody know they were home until dinner time. And all these sheriff's departments, all these policemen out there combing the woods for their bodies. They came over and asked me several times if I had seen anybody go, you know, down that back road. I said, "No."
But Bonnie's the one that kept hearing the siren.
She's the one, yeah. She kept hearing them. And they kept saying, Mr. Cook, don't separate. Stay together." Berman said the next morning he found out it was, they weren't married. They're two different names. He says, "Yeah." He said, "They stayed together, all right." I thought I'd die.
Charlie, what is that? What did you tell me over the phone that you really built them a haunted house that they wouldn't forget?
Every Halloween they have wanted me to do this, and every Halloween it's been a turmoil over the house, so we wouldn't bother with the haunted house. So this year we weren't going to give much of a party, just you know. just roast a couple wieners or something. I wasn't going to have it. I told Berman, I said, I'd take him to a Walt Disney picture and a hamburger or treat, and that would be it. Because I felt like I just couldn't spend that much time with him. So, Faye said, well, she'd give the party. So we went over there late one night, stayed until about 12:30, and they had a time, those kids. Well, Faye and Diane were the ones that did most of this, but anyway, they had a big hut made out of cabbage palms, you know, and it was just in the weeds, way back in the weeds, you know, sort of a clearing.
Oh.
And they got a big cardboard box, and they put some kind of crepe paper or something on this, made it look very scary. They dressed little Vaughn, you remember that little skinny kid that runs around Danny all the time, they dressed him up like a vampire, and put him down in the coffin. And they had candles lit there where you could see on each end of the coffin, like torches, you know, you could see the vampire down in the coffin. They had cooked, we cooked some spaghetti without the sauce, you know, just plain spaghetti, and put it in a dish with the, you got some of the liquid from the boiled spaghetti and put it in the dish and kind of makes it icky, you know. Well, we put this in a dish. There was a ketchup mixture in another dish. And a vampire blood, you know. And I don't know. There's several other dishes like that. So we get a hold of the little kids' hands and they come into the haunted house. And the first thing they did was stick their hands down in a dish of brains, you see. and that really set them off. And then they'd go on through and see the rest of this, you know, and jack-o'-lanterns sitting all over, and ghost heads and with lights, flashlights flickering on and off. And they had a time. They went on talking about this. And then as they went in the place, some of the kids would be hiding in the bushes and try to grab their legs, you see, in the dark. When they'd come out, they'd try to grab their hair or something, you know, as they were going out. And floating beards going all through I'm telling you, there's a clothesline there with a ghost on it, you know, the skeletons and the floating beards and whatnot. I'm telling you, those kids had they really got scared to death.
Oh, did they?
They really got, they got carried away with it, you know. And then they, after it was all over and they realized, you know, it was just fun and everything. They went back in there and they started telling ghost stories and they scared one another to death all night long while the party was going on for the adults.
Well, now, Faye goes in for this too?
Oh, yeah. She's the biggest instigator of the whole thing, her and Diane.
Oh, really?
I'm more or less, I was scared to death they were going to set the woods afire with those torches, you know, and I was afraid somebody would knock them over, but they all worked out real nice. But we had she fixed what she wanted for her family, and Diane fixed what she wanted for her family, and I fixed what I wanted for my family. We just put it all together, and that was what we didn't really go to any extra trouble. Or
and Diane is it up in for that too?
Well, that's all they do is sit around trying to figure out something to do for the kids. You know, I can't spend that much time with my kids. But they are pretty good at it.
Well, now, what I thought was that all Faye did was work. She'd work on that school bus.
She's nothing but an oversized grown kid. Is what she is. She's really good with the kids. You know, she can get out and work with them. Just lets her house go and just takes up with the children. Well, she's building a house, and I bet you all this won't last long. She gets that house built, she'll have enough to do without having to figure out ghost stories.
Oh, that's such a mistake to do all that building and spend so much money, Shirley.
Yeah.
You know the houses we used to live in.
There was only the two kids. If I were her, I'd stay right in that trailer and forget about paying taxes, but she wants to get into the tax group, I guess.
That's right, she just has two children.
If I had just two kids, that's where I'd be, is in a trailer, I think.
Well, all those trailers now, all you got to do is get a little cubby hole for each one of them.
Yeah, they're getting them now, so they're almost as big as any kind of a home, you know, see. I went into one here not long ago, and it was fabulous.
You got two full-size trailers that you just
hooked together somehow or another, and you walk in from one side to the other. It's just fabulous.
Put side by side.
Now, when I, the first time I ever even thought I'd live in a trailer was when we went to Orlando with the kids, and we lived comfortably, and that was two bedroom, two bath, kitchen, dining room, and it was just, what was that, 45, I think it's 45 feet long. It was real nice. It's more compact than a big house.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I had more closet space in that trailer than I've got in my house.
Yeah.
That's right.
And had little corners used.
Yeah. And in there I had a broom closet. And this one here I have to use the big closet, you know, for the broom closet.
They're changed the tax.
So when I open the door, all the handles fall out. I can't keep them hung on the hooks. So half the time I'm as bad as Bonnie is. I just stick the broom in the closet. And the next time I open the door, it falls out and hits me in the head. But
if you got a trailer, if you want to build a junk building out there, you see, you'd have to make another trailer of it. That'd keep you off the tax rate.
Yeah.
Get another trailer.
She's got a nice trailer. I don't know what.
Let me tell you, when Swicord had that big trailer of his out there, he had a little wore out trailer that he used for his photo studio and junk room.
Yeah.
And I think he gave $200 for it. And just pulled it out there and wired it, and the roof leak. He could have mended that if he would, but he didn't have enough money then to mend anything.
Mm-hmm.
Just pour that, you know, that roof cement or whatever they call it on the thing, and it would stop the leak. And that's all he needed to do, just keep the water out of it.
And all the taxes you have to pay for one is on the tag, isn't it? You have to pay. I think it was on ours, all I had to pay was the $35 tag fee.
Yeah.
That's all. Now, I had to keep up insurance real good, you know, real heavy on the trailer.
Yeah.
You have to, I guess that's compulsory, because they're more susceptible to accidents and storms than the house would be.
And then you're supposed to moor them these days with cables and everything.
Yeah. We didn't do that. Yes, we did. We did that with ours, but finally.
I don't
imagine Berman
would put up with just without anything short of that.
No.
not now, anyhow.
But shortly after we moved from down there, they had a storm pass through there, a tornado, and it ripped out a lot of trailers right there where we were at.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they were anchored. Some of them were anchored down. They were twisted all to pieces.
That would be the same.
So,
I was over at Miss Mary's one day, and she used a telephone, really, and we would sit there and talk a little bit. And now this is new. It's the most unexpected thing. I never thought I'd hear that again. Why, she says, Marvin don't have to sit here on my nose all the time. He says, if I could just get somebody to live out here, he could just go back to work. Well,
he must be getting tired of having him around or something.
Well, you know, I've noticed that. You can't get over there, but what, they're both always right
together.
There.
Yeah.
Well, I don't care who it is. You don't need that close.
Well, she's scared to death. Even when I go over there, she calls Marvin, wherever he's doing, to come in there and sit down.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yes. Well, she did this time.
Yeah.
Well, now, what's that for? She ain't scared.
I don't know. She's just like that. And boy, if he's outside, she's outside. She's just scared to death. She doesn't go anywhere that she doesn't lock her doors. If she goes down to the pasture or the garden, she locks all her doors. And she comes back, and they're in the house together. She locks the doors. And if he goes outside, she's right with him. If I were Marvin, I'd have to go off to myself a few hours out of every day anyway. And it would drive me up a wall.
Well, I
never lock those doors. They're right now, they're open. And Bourbon's got an arsenal in there. That's one of his hobbies, his guns.
Yeah.
And he's got an arsenal there in his den.
Yeah, you miss it someday, too.
Well, I wish he would. I wish somebody would take every one of them. That worries me to death. His daddy was the same way. His daddy loved guns from a very early childhood. And his mother and his daddy all the time had arguments about those guns. So when daddy got old, and he was shooting holes in his britches, daddy said, Berman said, if I ever get in that way, he said, I want you to take all those guns and go bury them somewhere. And I said, well, I'm not going to wait. I'll go bury them now. I'll get rid of them. He said, no. He said, I want my guns now. I said, well, you're never going to be too old for your guns. That's just the way he's going to be. I worry about him constantly. Johnny went in there one time here about a year ago. He started breaking Johnny in on these guns here when he was about 9 years old.
Yeah.
Now Johnny wants a shotgun for Christmas. And I said, look here, boy. I said, you can have anything but a shotgun. And I said, until you leave home, you're not going to get a shotgun. I said, you can just forget about it. I said, I don't care what your dad says, you're not going to have a gun. I said, I don't have any say-so over him very much about his guns. But I said, when it comes to you, you're not getting a shotgun. So now I got him talked into getting a motorbike, mini bike or something, you know, to ride around the place there, rather than get his mind off the shotgun.
Hey,
he shot a hole through the roof. Johnny did.
I remember you said. What? Yes, sir. Faye picked up some information yesterday, the day before. We were over at the... went over there to wash the clothes, and she stopped at that new hardware place, building supply, you know, by Robert Smith.
Uh-huh.
And old Henry Barry was there. He run it, or at least he's working there. And they got to talking about Reddick, the fella that owns it. He's that big fella. Hell, he can't walk in that door.
Ooh.
That is great big hands and everything. And everything he touches doubles in price.
Another Uncle Colbert.
Except I don't think he has a private life or anything like that. Oh. Now he's put in this hardware store over there. And
to the boy.
Who told you that?
Henry Barry.
Henry told her that. He put all that in for his boys.
He got five boys. Five children. I think they're all boys. Maybe all but one.
And then he's got all them animals over there. And I didn't realize how many he had. He's like Noah's Ark.
Every kind of animal you can meet.
That isn't that place there on
the new place, right
across
from the candy.
Where the chain link fence is.
Yeah,
I know it. I know he's got all kinds of animals.
Deer,
in there.
Two
of everything, I think.
Uh-huh. And Henry Barry says that.
Deer and what?
Well, what are they going to put in that store?
They got just hardware stuff.
That's all they're going to have is hardware there.
I don't know.
He didn't mention all.
But he put it up for the boys.
Uh-huh. Henry says those boys don't go anywhere. They don't play football or basketball or anything like that. They go with their parents everywhere.
They stay at home.
Henry says he never saw any children like it. He said that Reddick gives them everything they want, but they stay at home.
And he told them, as long as they stayed at home, he'd do that, didn't he?
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. One of them 16 years old.
How old's the other one?
I don't know, but they're down below that.
I didn't know he had one that old.
Henry said one of the oldest is, and I saw him the other day in there. He was waiting on people, and he's about 16.
Now that puts a new light on that thing over there.
But that's all for the boys.
Well, that's all right. They learn something.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. But now if they leave that.
Yeah.
The way to keep them cool.
Yeah.
Henry said the grandmother, there's just evidently two children in the family. Reddick has a brother. And his mother.
We gotta go out and let the cows in free.
Yeah. Anyway, there's money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Shirley, I don't know how Berman keeps going the way he does. Don't he ever get tired?
He's heading for a nervous breakdown. What's happening?
I can tell.
Yeah, I know he is. He can't sleep at night. He can't sleep over 3-4 hours.
That's not right.
He'll get up and he'll walk the house. I asked him what he's worried about. He said, I don't know. He says, I just can't. Well, he's going through this time of his life, this change. He's not particularly worried about any one thing. It's just a depression that you go through. I guess I know I've been through it myself a few times, and I know it's something I'm going to have to live with and work out in my own way. And when I get that way, I want to be all to myself. I'll go out for the longest walk you ever saw out through the woods out there.
Mm-hmm.
And I work off my hostility on the, just walking and being by myself. If I don't, I get to a nervous state where I take it out on the children.
Mm-hmm.
Or I get irritated at something Berman does. And I don't really mean to harm either one of them. So it's something I just have to learn to cope with. And I think I have. But Berman, this is all new to him. And it's just starting. It's gradually sneaking up on him where he doesn't realize it. Monday, a week ago, this is what I was talking to the preacher about. Monday, a week ago, he came into the house from down at the barn, and he'd been milking a cow. The cow had kicked the bucket, spilled the milk, splashed it all over him. He had milk all, like he'd rained milk all over him. And that made him furious. Well, he came to the house and he said, "I'll never milk that cow again as long as I live." He said, "I'll never milk it." And he put the milk, slammed the milk bucket down. I said, "Well, honey, what on earth happened down there?" And he says, "I'll never milk that cow again. Don't you ever ask me to milk that cow again. I won't milk her either. She's a kicker. That's that Holstein. And anyway, she hasn't got much to get a hold of, and I have to have a good quarter, or I can't get a hold of nothing. So I've let him take care of her." And it was late. He'd been out working with the bulldozer, and he came in, and it was well after dark. Hadn't had a cup of coffee for breakfast. He worked through his lunch hour at the university, and he didn't eat supper when he came in. And he jumped into his work breeches and out there on that bulldozer until dark, then went out and milked the cow. Plus, he hadn't had but about 3 hours sleep the night before, maybe 2 hours the night before that. So I was looking for him to break.
Mm-hmm.
So he came in from that milk barn, and he was absolutely shaking just like this,
mm-hmm.
all over. And I figured, well, he's just his temper, you know. I knew he was going to break, though, one day. So he went into the bedroom, and into the bathroom, took a shower, and he came out and put his pajamas on. And before supper. And I was in there in the kitchen fixing his supper. And I put it on the, and I'd already fed the children and got them out of the way, thank God. So I went into the bedroom, and he was in bed. And I said, "Honey, come in and have supper." "No, I'd already fed the kids, and I was going to give him his supper and take Tommy out to Cub Scouts that night. That was the night that Tommy was supposed to get his four awards for his work that he had done. And I'd asked him if he wanted to go, but I knew he was tired, and he said no, he didn't want to go. This was earlier in the evening, so I was going to go ahead and give him his supper and sit down and eat a bite with him and then take Tommy and run. So he went in. I went in there and asked him, I said, "Why don't you come in for supper?" And he said, "No, I don't want the supper." I started to tell him that I was going to take Tommy and run on over him and get there a little early so I can get back to it. And he said, jumped up out of bed and sat on the edge of the bed, and he said, "Honey, I want to talk to you." I thought, "Lordy, what did I do now?" So I sat down there and I said, "What's the matter?" And he started to cry. And that's only about the third time in his life in our married life that I've ever seen him with tears in his eyes. So he said, the first time was when he proposed, the second time was when our baby died, and this time. So I knew it had to be serious. And I sat down and I said, "Well, what's the matter?" And he said, "Honey, you've got to help me." He said, "There's something happening to me." He said, "I don't understand it." He said, "I don't know what's taking place." But he says, "I've got to have some help." And I said, "Well, how do you feel?" And he said, "I don't know. I'm all shaky inside. I'm very nervous." And I said, "Well, it is no wonder. You don't get any sleep. You don't half eat. You're staying on the go all the time. And you've got that drive that you've got to get this done. You've got to get that done." I said, "You've got to slow down." He said, but I got to get it done. I said, sure. I said, you're going to live forever. So I said, you just rest and go on to bed. And I said, I'm going to take Tommy on over because I promised him that I'd take him. And I said, we'll talk again when I get back because it's getting late. And he says, yes, you got time for Tommy. You don't have any time for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I went ahead. I took Tommy on over, and Tommy got his awards, and he was so pleased and happy, you know. It did me some good to see him, you know, with making his little achievements. When I got back, he was pretending he was asleep, and I wasn't gone an hour.
Oh, just a little while.
I was gone just about an hour.
All the way
around? Yeah, I went over there, and I didn't stay for refreshments at the end of the meeting. I left before the meeting was over. But as soon as he got his awards, and they did their little games and achievements, they were to throw discs to see who could throw the farthest disc and things like this. And as soon as he got these little achievements done, then we left. And I was gone, about an hour and 10 minutes, I guess, all together. It takes about 20 minutes over there and 20 minutes back, so I did all that in about an hour and 10 minutes. But anyhow, when I got back, he was laying there pretending he was asleep. And I went ahead and got Tommy in bed, and I got ready and went to bed. And I turned the light on, and I said, honey, I said, let's do some talking. He said, I don't want to talk. I turned the light off and went around and went to sleep. And he's been all right ever since.
Oh, really?
But he still has his drive, and it's working up again. He's getting ready to break again, and if he doesn't soon stop and get some rest, you know, no one can go, I don't think, on 3 and 4 hours of sleep.
No.
They got to have more rest than that, and he can't rest. And he'll get up, and the minute he moves in that bed, it wakes me up, and then I listen to him walking the floor, reading the newspaper, rustling papers in the den, you know. He's even gone through the gun cabinet at night. And I've watched him without him knowing that I was watching. I could see his reflection in the window from where I was standing in the den in the dining room. And he'd take bullets, put them in the gun, and take them out of the garden. You know, just shuffling everything around, going through daddy's belongings. And that always depresses him. I've got a half a notion to take everything that belonged to daddy and put it in somehow a chest somewhere and just lock it up.
Yeah.
I don't dare destroy him. But that destroys him. That depresses him very, very much. And when he gets in that kind of state, it's hard to bring him out of it. So, it really, I guess, in a way, he has to have his work to work off his hostility. This is the way he feels. It's what he says he has to do. He feels he's got to do it. And I get rid of mine by going off by myself, you know.
Well, it always seems simple to outsiders, you know.
Yeah.
I'd say
what's going on in his mind is really a battle with him. He's got to learn a way to work it out himself. And
I'd say if he'd just sit out every now and then, rest a little.
Right. But he never has. He can't go fishing like a normal man would do, you see. If he goes fishing, he's got to accomplish something. He's got to pull in a fish every few minutes. And if he can't pull in a fish every few minutes, regular clockwork like that, he doesn't care about going in the first place. But if he can't get it catch anything, that's even worse.
Well, now, let me tell you, it was a revelation to me to see him on that tractor. He just goes in that tractor like it's a taxi. He don't take his time around that field, just like it's a race course.
Yeah. It's
well,
everything.
It takes a whole lot more energy to do it that way than it does to cut the throttle down.
Well, that's why he had to have a bigger tractor that would take the work a little bit faster, a little bit harder, that could do the work, and he could get it done earlier, you know, easier, you know. Oh, he's not happy going moseying around that field. Now, he will when he's disking, he'll slow down. Or when he's pulling any kind of dangerous equipment, he'll go to a happy medium, but he won't go. He's doing this too a lot for Johnny. He has slowed down on the tractor quite a bit from what he used to because he's doing it to teach Johnny not to get in a hurry with machinery. So this is working out a little better.
Yeah.
But really, if Johnny was there, he'd go around 90 miles an hour around that field.
I never
I never saw anything like it.
But he gets it done. I don't know. One woman told me, she said, "What in the world are you complaining about?" She said, "At least he gets off his rear end and gets out there and goes to work." She said, "All mine wants to do is sit and watch television."
And Bernard don't watch television. He got no time for that.
He'll watch one or two programs in the evening just so he won't have to go to bed early and then have to wake up in the middle of the night. You know?
Oh, I see.
Because if he sits there, if he doesn't watch television, he goes to bed when I go to bed about 8:30, 9 o'clock, if I can make it. But most nights it's 10:30, 11 o'clock. But if he goes to bed that early, he'll go to sleep for 1 or 2 hours and wakes up, and then he's up for the rest of the night.
As they say, he doesn't depend on it on television.
No. he likes 1 or 2 programs, especially if it's a western or an old movie. You know, something's been on way back in the '30s. He likes to watch these. Something. He lives a lot in the past, you know.
I didn't realize that, but
he likes the olden days, you know. He doesn't care about, well, I don't either.
I don't either.
I'd rather live back in the past, 200 years ago or
yeah,
so.
Yeah, as much as I can.
But
you go broke.
He'd be no different back in those days if he had lived back in that time. In that era, he'd be the same as he is today. I think just out trying to do more than trying to put in 10 men's work in one day.
Well, I remember people when I was growing up who were a little like that.
Yeah, Daddy was like that until we married.
Oh.
When we married, he quit. He just quit. He said when he got to be 65, I think it was, he wasn't going to work another day, and he didn't.
Oh, really?
He didn't. He used to plant gardens. He used to take care of his bees. He used to take care of his cattle. See, that's how we got started in the cattle business, was because of Daddy. And he quit. He just told Berman to go down and get the cows. That's all there was to it. So we bought the cows from Daddy.
Why?
He said he was 65.
He
quit. Anyway, he said he got 65. He said he's going to retire. He'd worked long enough, and that's what killed him. Really, I think he'd be still alive today, and he'd be going strong if he'd kept going. But he was fine and healthy. There was no reason why. But then he took to the Bible. Well, he's always been a religious man, but he took that Bible and he'd read it from cover to cover, and as soon as he'd finish it, he'd turn it over and start over again. And
well, I miss that. I that's one of the things that I just kick myself for missing it. Don't you know, I used to tell you I wanted to come over and talk with him. Well, I wouldn't do much of the talking, you see, but
no.
I couldn't.
You couldn't get a word in edgewise if he was there
with
Daddy.
I wouldn't have had much word to get in, but, now, you see, you know, that's a queer thing. Now, how long did that last, that Bible reading? 7 years?
Well, it was 65 when he started, really got serious about, you know, reading the Bible over and over and over again and underlining every script. You ought to see his Bible. Someday when you're over there, I'll show you.
I'd like to.
He underlines all these verses that he'd try to, you know, then he'd go out and he'd talk to somebody real quick about the whole thing, you know, about something he just learned or something he thought was right in his mind. Maybe he'd get it all wrong, but at least it was his version of what he was reading. And he'd argue with preachers, and they'd try to tell him, you know, how the version really went, and he'd say, no, that's not my viewpoint, and he'd give them his, and then they'd get in an argument. This went on. From the time he was 65 until he died when he was, what, 83? 82, 83.
That's a good long time.
Yeah.
That's a sort of another
just
life.
Before he died, though, he was getting to about 6 months before he died. He was getting to the place where he couldn't see very well.
Yeah.
But he still went a lot on his scripture that he'd repeated and read so many times.
You know, it's remarkable how they do get a whole lot of that. And, you know, that the school people, educated people, you see, wouldn't get
and it's you know, I've known several people who put off, and they say, well, one of these days I'm going to quit and do all this reading. Miss Patterson was one of them, and you know, it was right sad. I'd go over there a lot of times, and she'd be sitting back in that chair. She was big, you know. You'd see her down at the store. She'd come down and get a mail and drove that old Chrysler. And she'd have all her books there around her, and she'd start talking to you about it. She was a witness, but for a while, she wasn't so objectionable. She got a little bit more so as she went along. But one thing after another happened to her. He fell, got so he was sort of wobbly, and then she got more pain with her bone trouble, and then that boy that they adopted caused him just grief, clear on to the tail end.
Oh.
And so it almost squeezed it out to where she is. I used to go there to the little sessions they had where they studied, kind of like the quarterly, Sunday school quarterly. They had one of those things, studying books, and it was interesting. And they had the same bunch that came over there when they were up to it.
Mm-hmm.
And Leola Wicks came out from town. She was the best talker. And it was the right. Right, ideal little situation for a while, except it was right on borrowed time, you see. It's right on the brink, you see. She and Phil both, they died within a couple of months.
Oh.
And you just wish they deserved it, you see. They'd
yeah.
put up with young'uns and poor relatives and all sorts of things like that, for so much they deserved a little time, you
yeah.
see.
Yeah.
And it could be that Berman's daddy was a little like that. He figured the time had come where he could do some things he wanted to do.
Well, I don't know. I think too much of anything is a bad thing. I just always felt that way. I mean, if he had mixed a little bit of something else in with his scripture every day. Now, he had a lot of food for thought, because what he read, he remembered, and then he'd tell you, he'd talk it out, discuss it with someone. And it kept him going. It kept
well,
him going.
Well, you see,
Bob,
Shirley, when you get a person who's not a bookish man and puts so much time on a book, you see, he's going to make basic errors.
Uh-huh.
For one thing, that book of scriptures, you see, is about 20 books all in one.
Yeah.
And what they're tackling is a whole library.
That's it. He'd have a book of Revelation.
Yes.
And the Bible, the Testament, the Old and the New Testament. And he'd check this with this and back to this and
yeah.
this. You know?
Yeah.
And it'd drive me up a wall. And he almost did, just in his conversation. And I was his first pick, you know. As soon as he got through that Bible, it was our door he came to. And I'd always be there by myself. So he couldn't find anyone else then during the day to talk to, he'd be back.
Yeah.
So I caught it all.
Well, I
wish I could remember everything that he has told me, you know. I wish I'd been listening more closely.
Now you do.
Uh-huh. Yeah. But then when the kid's squalling and this one needed changing and this one needed his nose wiped, and I'm telling you, I couldn't stand there listening to scripture with all
yeah.
I had going.
Well,
my tub of diapers running over and things like this, I just couldn't.
You see, I've done so
somebody
much.
Somebody wanting some gas out at the service station.
I've done so much just plain old routine, just brain killing work, you see, with bibliographies, and I know the ins and outs of it, and I don't know the scriptures, but I know how to handle books, and I used to think of that very often. If I could just pass on to them some of the little traps they get into,
yeah,
you see,
yeah.
And one is just what you said, taking too much.
Yeah. If he had sense enough, now if he'd kept the cattle, for instance,
yeah,
instead of having Berman take over, it would have given him a chance to get out of the house and tend to the animals and get some scripture off his mind for just a little bit during that day. And instead he'd go off and he'd burden everybody by, well, they'd hate to see him come. They'd lock the doors, pretend they weren't home, slip out the back way or do anything. I know. They'd tell me. They'd just, well, I got to be where I was about the same way.
See him coming.
And when he was there and I couldn't get away and he had to keep talking, I'd keep shoving something to him to eat and something to drink to keep him quiet. I tell you, I think of some of the tricks that I played on him. Now, and I'm awful ashamed of myself. But
well,
golly, Moses, I couldn't sit there and listen to it all day long.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And many times I had things that, you know, places I had to go. I was running the service station. Berman was going to school, and I was running the service station and taking care of three babies at one time, and Daddy sitting there talking to Christian, and I was about to sign the walls. I'd be so glad when a customer come in walking.
Yeah. And any one of those things would have been a full-time job.
Yeah.
And a pleasure.
And then
if you didn't have the other stuff, you could have listened to him. Well, maybe you didn't have the turn. I could have listened to him.
When Johnny,
I had the turn.
When I was pregnant with Johnny, just before he was born, we were planting a 60-acre field of potatoes, nice potatoes.
Good Lord.
Well, we were cutting up these potatoes by the bushes, you know, to dry out before we plant them. Then I had a great big apron. I was out like this, you know. They thought I was going to have triplets when Johnny was born. But anyway, I had an apron, and it had great big pockets in it. You've seen some of these color people.
Yeah.
Well, I made these out of old feed sacks.
Mm-hmm.
And I made them especially to hold the potato eyes,
uh-huh,
the pieces of potato, you see, and put them down in the pockets. And then I'd walk along the rows and just drop the potatoes down on the rows. And he'd come along with them. He had the easy job. He was sitting on the tractor with the blade, and I'd just cover
thing.
Him up. Here I am, got this big apron with big pockets and all that. I had to reach way out here. I couldn't see the rows. I had to throw the potatoes out.
You had to see it way ahead of
me. I had to guess at the where the road was at, you know, keep throwing it out ahead of me. So about the time I got down to about the middle of the field, I started having labor pains. That wasn't bad enough. Here come Daddy, you know, making sure I was getting everything right. Then as soon as he got down there, he'd forget about his potatoes and he'd follow along behind me and let me hear the scripture. Here I was listening to him throwing the potatoes hot and dirty and having labor pains right in the middle of a potato field. I'll tell you, I wanted to be any place else in the world but right there in that middle of that field. Dirty as I was, and expected any minute to have to be rushed to the hospital.
60 acres
of potatoes.
God almighty, that's a lot of potatoes.
Well, we made pretty good on that 60 acres though that year.
Oh.
And well, that's what we put the pumps in the service station with. The money we made from the potatoes, we finished up the service station.
Yeah.
Then we made pretty good at the service station, so we kept, you know, climbing as we went along. And before we did this, right after we were married, and before we were married, I went out there and I helped him piling, what do you call them? Palmetto roots. You'd have to go out and pull them up out of the ground. He'd go out there with a tractor and try to loosen as many as he could with a bush and bog, and then we'd go out, grub them out of the ground, and put them in piles and burn them. And boy, we did that for the longest time. We were still doing it, even when we had that field of potatoes in there. I don't know. It's just one thing. You know, we just kept going from one thing to another.
Well, I'm telling you. I'll go down there, York, and we better let them cows in,
because
I don't know what they're going to do, Shirley.
Well,
I tell you what, we just get in our old sitting there and riding.
Well, we'll ride down to my car if you want.
No,
you better go in the old one.
John went right around 1600 and end the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, the 9th of November, 73. Time went right, around 1600, and then the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, the 9th of November, 73. Time went right, around 1600, and the end of the visit with Shirley this Friday morning, the 9th of November, 73.